It's time again for the Scotty Johnny podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam, talking Wisconsin sports, NFL through D3, college hockey, doesn't matter. Two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what do you bet on Twitter, with music by Delete Great Cars and Trucks. Here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome in to the Scotty Johnny podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett, coming at you live once again here through podcast and the magic of recorded audio and video. With me, as per usual, is Aaron Flottam.
Hey, John, what's going on, man?
So much, Aaron. There's so much to talk about in sports right now. It's going really well. Everything's going really well.
A lot of hypotheticals. Mostly, only one sport's really cranking out any real results right now. But
this is true.
Congratulations, Brad Keselowski, by the way.
Yeah, and we're going to try to make sure we touch on that later on in the episode. But we do want to also point out that today we are again joined by a friend of the podcast, frequent guest here, Jim Widener, who is with us once again.
No way!
Hello, fellas. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, Jim. What's going on, man?
Not much. Just enjoying a good rainy Southern Minnesota night, so
yeah,
thought we could talk some make-believe sports tonight.
Oh my God. It was so gorgeous down here in Janesville today. It was 85 and sunny all day long. It was amazing.
It's been really nice. We've had a couple thunderstorms roll through central Wisconsin the last couple days, but it hasn't been bad. I got a little nice fishing in the other day, and it's been a pretty decent time here recently. So it's nice to see.
Summer being here is nice. Although on Saturday we had three tornado warnings in Rock County. Oh, that was fun. Three supercells rolled through back to back to back, and I'm in the basement. Now, okay, all clear. Everybody back upstairs. What is going on? Three Jeez. In 2 hours. It was nuts. Anyways, right. So.
On top of that, though, then I guess I want to remind everybody that we are on iTunes, we are on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and many other places where you're likely to find your podcast normally. Wherever it is that you look for us, wherever it is you find us, please remember to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us. The reviews are very important. They help other people find the show, and it's always good to have more people here, and we obviously always appreciate our friends out in Austria and Germany, the United Kingdom, Canada, who seem to keep coming in to listen to us. So we definitely appreciate their time. But make sure you get that review and help us out here. You can also find some of our stuff going up on YouTube, though we are having an issue in that. Obviously, as you know, if you listened to the show before, we do have Cars and Trucks music, which we perform by permission. But YouTube's taking a little longer to realize that we have permission on that. So that's what we have here. I do also want to remind you that you can follow us all on Twitter. You can follow the show at Scotty Johnny Pod. You can follow me at Not So Humble Host. Jim, you're at Jim_Widener51.
At Jim Widener51.
I added an underscore just because it seemed interesting.
Hey, I bet that guy who owns that does a great job, too.
Speaking of people,
congratulations to that underscore guy.
Yes,
yeah.
Underscore Twitter.
Yeah. And, none of us knew what an underscore or hashtag were prior to.
Well, until you started signing up for, like, Facebook and stuff. I'm like, no, that's not available.
And speaking of people who are good on Twitter, everybody. There's one guy here who's very good, the master of Twitter, the king of Twitter himself. Aaron, where are you on Twitter?
Did you see what was trending on # Go Pack Go? No. Yeah, I am at Cheddar Talk. At Cheddar Talk. You can find me there. Ampersam Cheddar Talk.
That's not an ampersand.
No, it's not. What is the at sign? I forget what it is. What's that called?
I always call it the at sign. What?
Yeah. Ampersand's the little and thing, that weird little, like, circle.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah, and then # is a pound sign.
Ampersands appear in law firm names frequently, so yeah. All right, okay. So we're going to get into this, and we're going to start everything off with what we call our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
All right, so starting with this, the first thing we want to do, because we like starting with Packers, obviously, first off here, is the NFL has, like we talked about last time, has allowed teams to open up facilities. The Packers are not bringing players in. They are not bringing coaches in. But one thing that they are going to do is they're going to start bringing in 75 employees. They're going to have people working at Lambeau Field. They're going to open up Lambeau Field. They're going to have 75 people allowed in there at any time working. But none of them will be coaches and none of them will be players. So it's nothing much to react to that. It's nice that they're letting people in to work. There's enough room in Lambeau that you could, you know, have people cleaning or working things or packing things at the pro shop or whatever you're doing there to make sure people are getting in and doing things. I'm sure there's maintenance that needs to be done in anything that big as well. And there's enough space between I mean, it's a gigantic place, and 75 people in Lambeau Field can be hundreds of yards away from each other any given time. So, I don't, there's not much to react to that.
Are they opening up the Packer Pro Shop?
You know, that part I don't know. I don't know that they're going to be letting people necessarily in. And what we, you know, we talked with Max last week, Max Kale, and doesn't sound like they're really going to be opening up a ton other than keeping people distant in there. I don't know if they've got a specific plan for how they're going to open up the Pro Shop to people. At this point, I mean, you can find a lot of things. I mean, obviously, visit the Packers Pro Shop online. If you are a owner, if you have that, there's specific places that you can put in your ID and everything, and there's a separate owners section of the Pro Shop and everything. So, I mean, you can always check those things out. It's always good to look at. I don't know that they're letting
so you can get open. That 5% discount for owning the team.
The value of owning the team is generally that
cheap shot.
They can't move the team without your permission. That is the value of owning the stock, I guess, is
true story.
They have to ask your permission.
Love to hear that conversation between Mark Murphy and my dad, who's a stock owner, about moving the team. That would be I would put that on YouTube.
There's
heck
a group of
no.
Of like 35 guys in the Brown County area who are all veterans and part of the VFW, who all basically have kind of a majority share, because each of them had like several hundred shares of stock before the last split. I think it was, I'm remembering which one it was, the one in like early 2000s, late 1990s, where they had a share of stock. They were initially trying to make it a non-voting share. But the NFL said you can't have stock and give those people non-voting stock. That's not what stock is. And they're like, okay.
No, so that's when they started doing all the renovations on Lambeau Field. That's when they did that big. That's the one you're talking about, right?
Yep.
The first big one.
That was the one that they, the Bob Harlan. They say that Bob Harlan saved the franchise.
Right.
Yeah.
So what they did
they took the
original shares of stock and they split them. So that anybody who had one of the original shares now had 1,000 shares. So all the people who are buying in the last couple buys get one share of stock, or however many they buy, but the original owners have 1,000 shares for each of their original shares of stock. Just to make sure that the original owners still outvote anybody who joins in.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I mean, it makes sense. So
That's fair. It's
interesting you bring up back to, you know, them opening up Lambeau Field, and eventually, you know, whatever they do for this season, you know, if they do the playing in front of no fans, I know the NFL and Roger Goodell has said that they, you know, want to play in front of fans and all that. Are they going to start the hotel that they built right on the Lambeau campus? Are they going to eventually move the players to that hotel?
They haven't talked about that. I don't know.
Get out. Just throw that out there.
You were going to say something.
No, I was just going to say, I was just asking, is that the hotel over, what is that, Hinterland?
Right by Hinterland. I'm forgetting the name of it. I tried to get a hotel room
there. Is
it
a Kohler? Or,
that's right, Kohler, whatever, yeah. It looks nice. It's kind of like, if you know... you know, my background right now, if you're watching on the YouTube, is Camp Randall. Right across from Camp Randall, on the south end zone, there's a Hotel Red. It's kind of like that. You want to go to that hotel if you're there for game day. But if you're going for the game, they're going to make you take the entire weekend. So you're paying for Saturday and Sunday if you're going for a Sunday game. Or Friday and Saturday, whatever it is. you know, if you go to Hotel Red on a Badger weekend, you don't just get that night. You know, they're like, no, no, no.
But that's always been true in Green Bay, though, as far as I've been able to go to games, you know, on my own and be able to afford tickets, is that if you get a hotel downtown, even if it's the budget inn, you're getting Friday through Monday. That's just how it was. Or Saturday night and Sunday night, at least. Saturday and Sunday night, at least. You know, even if you're not going to use it, you have to get both nights. I mean, and that's how a lot of small towns survive, too. Duluth was the same way on Grandma's Marathon weekend. You would have to. I mean, and everybody would jack their rates, too. I mean, that's the other thing. But, I mean, those hotels, that's what they survive on, too. So, and that whole a complex right off Lambeau Field there, what, that's 1 year old? They've had 1 year to make money off that place. What a hit. What a huge hit. I mean,
I think
they were complete last year, right?
Well,
the year before, so it might be 2 years.
It was open when I went to the Bills game 2 years ago. So it's been open for 2 years.
Either way, I mean, they're still probably massively in debt from that one. That stinks, man. That's a lot of lost revenue that they're not going to get back for this year. So,
well, the landlord for the hotel is the Packers. It's an NFL franchise that has the ability to absorb some loss. So I'm sure they'll be all right. The nice thing is that they are bringing in people to make sure that they're getting people paid and they're getting people taken care of on some of this. So that's at least, it's a good thing to be doing if you're an organization like this. And, I hope they're taking care of as many people as they can. One thing that we did want to share, too, in terms of Packer news, we got this, and I want to make sure I give out my full credit. I have at TrillGates7, the number 7, which is the Honorable Drew Peacock, on Twitter.
Okay.
Posted this, which was originally shared by Skins Domain. So, I don't know where exactly. That's who put it up here. It looks like it might be a Facebook thing, or I think it's actually an Instagram account. But it's a list of every team and their interdivisional record since 2010. The Packers actually have the third best interdivisional record of any team. Only the Steelers are like a half game ahead of them, I guess. So it's the Patriots are 48-12 in the AFC least. And then the Steelers are 41-18-1. The Packers are 40-18-2. Two ties in division in the last decade. So that's they're the third best interdivisional record of any team. And here's the fun part that everybody's enjoying right now is the team with the worst record against the NFC North from within the NFC North is the Minnesota Vikings, who are 25-33-2 against the NFC North. I guess they account for both Packers ties, and I guess that makes sense looking at it.
Right.
The Lions are 27-33. The Bears are 26-34. The Packers are the only team in the North with a winning record against the North.
Right. And they're third overall, only behind the Patriots and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Of course, the Patriots would be. And like we were talking about before the show even started, if you take the records of the Bills, the Jets, and the Dolphins, and you put them up against each other, they've all basically played 500 ball against each other for the last 10 years. And the Patriots just, if you eliminate the Patriots, they're all 500. What killed me about that, actually, John, when you brought that up and we were going through this, is the team that's in second place in the NFC North for record is not the Bears.
Well,
obviously not the Vikings, because you already tipped your hat on that one. And if you do the math, that means Detroit. And Detroit is only one game better than the Bears. But, I mean, Detroit's one game better than the Bears, who's one game better than the Vikings. So, I mean, it's the same foot race I was just talking about with the NFC East. But, basically it's been the Packers division. And it's not even close. And, I mean, if you've been watching football, I mean, what, the Vikings have one division championship and the Bears have one division champion. Yeah, Vikings have two and the Bears have one. And the Packers have the other seven, right?
And the Lions had one in 1991.
Oh, the Lions snuck one in there, too.
I thought the Vikings did.
Vikings had a couple, I think, but no.
The Lions just a couple years ago, didn't they clinch the North in Green Bay? I was at that game.
Yeah, that was when they ended up playing up the Case Keenum year.
Was that the year? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, they were really good that year. Yeah, no, they won that year, and I'm trying to figure out, who were they? I suppose this is, you know, research. I'm going to keep talking while John looks up who's won the NFC North.
Think about the
Lions, that a good majority of that record to get to being the second was Jim Caldwell. And what did that get him?
They fired him
because that wasn't good enough. And now they have Matty P running the franchise, as we like to call Matty Patty
on this program.
He's doing a bang up job with his pencil behind his ear.
And players leaving the team because they can't stand him.
Bears and Packers each have two division titles since from 2010 on. Vikings had the 2008 and 2009, but the Packers have the others. Bears had two in 05 and 06. And technically, the Lions have never won the North because they haven't won since it became the North. 1993 was the last time the Lions won a division. So 91 and 93 were their last two times they had division championships. And 91 is the last year. This is where I got 1991 from. That's the last year they won a playoff game.
Right, because in 93 they won the division and they had a really good team with Barry Sanders, Herman Moore. I think Andre Ware was the quarterback at the time, or was it?
I don't think he was that year. Anyway, I thought that was.
No, it wasn't Andre Ware. It was Rodney Peete, maybe. Either way, it was one of Wayne Fonts. It was one of Wayne Fonts' really good teams, and then they proceeded to get smoked by Brett Favre and Sterling Sharp in the first or second round of the playoffs. So.
I do remember
that because I think that was the last time Sterling Sharp played football.
Yeah, that was that 93 year that was Packers beat Detroit and then the Giants beat Minnesota. So three teams from the old Central in the playoffs altogether there. And then the Packers went on to go play Dallas and lose, which is what we did in the 90s other than the late 90s. But it seems like the early 90s were just... Just how much I hated the Cowboys.
Not to go too far off topic, but that's why 2 years ago or a couple years back when help me out, tight end that we had for a short time.
Jimmy Graham, who just left before the Bears.
Before Graham. Jared Cook, that sideline catch, and then Longwell banging in the field goal. And then we proceeded to get beat by the Falcons the next week.
Yeah,
badly. Most of us didn't care because that was our Super Bowl, was beating Dallas in Dallas in the fashion that they did.
It still hurt me a lot to see that that Falcons game because
At least the Falcons game was a boat race, so it was like whatever. By the second quarter, you're like, I'm just gonna stop right now. Stop caring because last week watching that because that year I think the Cowboys were the first overall seed.
Wasn't that Falcons game the last game that Don Capers was the Packers defense coordinator?
I believe you are correct.
I think that's right. Yeah. Here's the thing that I find interesting in the whole thing with Detroit being the second best team in terms of total record inside the division is in that entire time they're the only team that never won the division. They had the second best record. That what it tells you is. Again, Matt Stafford, I mean, you can't blame it all on Matt Stafford. He's had that team is up and down, and they've had any number of other issues with that team. But the one thing I'll say is Matt Stafford means you don't bottom out, but you also don't go that far.
I'd like to see the stat sheet that has Detroit's win-loss record against every other team outside the division because it's got to be maybe as bad as the Browns.
Because
apparently they lose to everybody else, so...
I don't know.
They aren't beating anybody else.
Yeah. Division records are always weird.
It's kind of interesting to see who's won the North from 2010 to present. I mean, the year that in 2010, the Bears won the North and then the Packers won the Super Bowl. So it's kind of interesting to see how that all played out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the NFC Championship game in Chicago that year.
Yeah, we got the BJ Raji touchdown dance.
Only touchdown that they because it was 10-7, 10-3. What was the final score of that one?
Was it 14-7?
I forget. Whatever.
It was not. It was like 14-7 or 21-14. It was a low scoring game, And right. basically the difference is that BJ Raji was able to intercept.
Well,
because he dropped into coverage, for crying out loud. What?
They also had the Rodgers made the saving touchdown, or he threw the pick, and he went and tackled, I think it was Urlacher, to prevent him from going to running in for a touchdown, too.
Here,
I think.
Here's
Rodgers didn't play well that game.
That defense was really good that year. Here's one thing I will throw out there that I saw on Twitter this week.
That was the only game in those playoffs he didn't play well in, by the way. That game, the game the week prior, and then the Super Bowl were ridiculous. Division games.
Well, the deal against Atlanta was, I've never seen somebody play like that.
That was surgical. Anyway, sorry, John, go ahead.
Well, it's the thing is, like, division games are different. You know everybody, you know everything about those teams. Division games are just different. Playing the Bears that year in a playoff game is crazy, and it should be marked as different than the other games they played because they tore apart the other teams that year in that playoff. Now that you've mentioned Urlacher, I want to bring up one thing. I got in a weird argument with somebody over. Adrian Amos tweeted out his top five linebackers of all time. He didn't say inside. He just said linebackers. And they were like, I'm trying to remember every one he had on there, but it was like Ray Lewis. I'm trying to think who the other names are, but he had like Singletary third, and he had Urlacher in fourth. I think Lawrence Taylor was on there. I can't remember if he was second. I think he might have been second. But you're sitting there and you're just like, man, you maybe should have thought about Chuck Bednarik or Nitschke or Butkus or Lanier or Hendricks. If you're going to just talk linebackers, I mean, Greg Lloyd.
Bryce,
I don't know.
Bryce Pop.
Right there,
Johnny Holland.
As everybody thinks, they're like, yeah, no. I mean, like, if you're going to talk about that, though, you can't have that list without having Nitschke and Butkus on the list. Like, that's one too for me, but it doesn't have to be for everybody. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he had Singletary third, and he had Urlacher fifth, and then some Bears fan got on there. He's like, this is ridiculous. Brian Urlacher should be way higher on this list. He's way better than Mike Singletary. And I was like, what? I don't know what you're talking about. That's ridiculous. The idea that Brian Urlacher was a better player than Mike Singletary. And I was like, look, I'm a Packers fan. We were scared of Singletary. That guy was crazy. He was so good. And just those eyes is iconic. And you're like,
oh, no. And that's the thing, too, is that so to what the Packers have had with starting quarterbacks between Starr, Favre, and Rodgers.
And Herbert. Thanks. Arnie Herber. Don't leave Arnie Herber out of the conversation. He's a Hall of Famer.
TJ Rubel.
Arnie Herber is a Hall of Famer. NFL Hall of Famer.
Anthony Dillwig. Dave Keel.
Don't you dirty the name of Arnie Herber with Blair Keel.
Sorry, Blair Keel. I didn't even get it right. Yeah. But seriously, like you could argue that Bart Starr, Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, all going to be you could argue top 10 all time. The opposite of that is the Bears, despite the Bears have never had a good quarterback. Let's all the way back to the
Sid
old
Luckman.
Days. What's that?
Sid Luckman. Sid Luckman, the only one.
All the way back to the old days. That's why I said to the old days. In modern time, they haven't had a good quarterback. But one thing that they have had, good middle linebackers.
Yeah.
Because, just Urlacher. Urlacher, yes, even five's a little high for him on the all-time list because you could fit some other people in there too. But Urlacher was good. Singletary was really good. Butkus was really good. Oh. That's three of the best.
Yeah. Butkus, from everything my brothers and my dad said, it was the best one out of the three.
Right, exactly. And the other thing, too, is you could argue that they have the two best running backs of all time in Peyton and Sayers.
Oh, yeah.
They really do. Sayers' career was really short. Peyton, everyone knows Barry Sanders is number one. I think we're past
Jim Brown is number one. Jim Brown is the best ever. Best single football player in history, in my mind.
God, Barry Sanders was really good.
I know.
Jerry Rice was really good, too. If we're talking all time. Anyways, but let's not go down
that. It's an argument, though.
The Bears have had some good talent at certain positions. Yes. And the linebacker position for me with them has always just amazed me. Like, how do you get Hall of Fame? And they're saying the same thing about quarterbacks with the Packers. Like, how do the Packers keep getting quarterbacks like this?
I'll say this, though. In my mind, too, at the time, Lance Briggs was a better linebacker than Urlacher. He out-tackled him most of his career.
True story.
Lance, I mean, like,
don't disagree with that at all.
Well, I mean,
I totally agree with that.
He was a scary human being. Yeah.
What was Richard Dent? What was Richard Dent's actual position? D end or outside linebacker?
D end.
I think he was defensive
end.
Defensive end. MVP of the Super Bowl. That dude's crazy good.
I always forget, but he also played with Buddy Ryan as a coach too. So I always forget whether or not he was a D end or a 3-4 outside linebacker or a 46 or whatever Buddy Ryan was coming up with at the time. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was the number of the player who they named the defense after. Yeah, the number 46. It's not it's a 4-6 whatever. Yeah, but that's neither here nor there. Just the idea that somehow somebody who was a Bears fan thought that Urlacher was the greatest linebacker in Bears history just blew my mind.
Not even top two on his own team.
I don't even think he was better than Wilbur Marshall.
Ooh. No,
he played for that 85 Bears.
Yeah, that's a good team, too. That's a good pick. I mean, Lance Briggs, my favorite story of him is when he, that dude wrecked his car, wrapped it around a pole, like a Lamborghini or something, and then walked away and left. And then they found it later, and they're like, hey, it looks like your car got destroyed. Was it stolen? They're like, no, I did that. I just didn't want to bother anybody. I just wanted to go home. So I just left the scene of an accident just to go. And they gave him a ticket, but you know he was drunk or high or something. And he's just like, I'm just going to walk home. It's cool. Heck of a football player, though. Heck of a football player. He scared me more than Urlacher did because that guy, he was like Wayne Simmons, but way better. Like, he was out for blood. And I love Wayne Simmons.
Wayne Simmons was a favorite. He's the first one, and I think I've said it on the show before, that he was the first one that Mel Kiper coined the phrase troubled youth in his draft book.
Very R.I.P. true, but very sad than that, but he was
that guy who was like the one guy in your defense. You need one guy who the other team is literally terrified of, I think, and that was him.
I think a lot of Packer fans have actually complained about that's what we haven't had. Right. And ever since, Coach Blonde Hair played Kevin outside Green? Linebacker for Pittsburgh.
Kevin Green,
thank you. Since, like, he was not necessarily, he wasn't playing for us, but when he was the coach, like, the other teams were scared of him on the sidelines because that's what he did for Pittsburgh back in the day. I can't remember the last time we had until now was Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith. I think that's what they bring, is that other teams are like, I mean, they're not criminals.
They're not crazy like Simmons. He was kind of crazy. I mean, like
crazy, but I mean, at the same time though, like this is the first time in a long time I remember the Packers having a defensive player that someone was scared of since Matthews in his prime, other teams had to deal with him, but they still weren't scared of him. We haven't had a good scaredy.
Desmond Bishop.
We used to have Chuck Cecil.
Yeah.
We used to have Wayne Simmons.
Maybe in that frame too, because Desmond Bishop, the one thing he could do is he could thump. I mean, he was not going to cover a human being, any human being, for any length of time, but he could step up and hit.
That's the thing, is that Martinez didn't have that quality about him either. Like, Martinez got a lot of tackles, but you're right. Like, he wasn't a thumper like that.
Right.
Yeah. No, he was where he needed to be. He made the play that was in front of him, and he was a good, solid player. But, yeah.
What the Packers defense needs is a good felon right now.
Well, I mean, like, the Patriots definitely are never afraid to sign a felon. The Patriots are like, I don't care what you've done. Can you play today? You know, they don't care. I mean, and that's... I mean, that says something. It's like, yeah, no, it's fine.
No, I think you need that type of at least one on your defense. And the Packers, you guys have said, haven't had it since Wayne Simmons.
And then you need to watch them. You need to put them on some kind of program and then take care of them. But, you know, find a way to let them play. They're probably way better off being on a team than off a team, to be completely honest. And I think we'll agree about that.
Right. But, Bill Belichick's like, can you at least go through the gun in the river? And is that a leg hanging out of your trunk? Push that.
It's like, jeez, I didn't see anything.
I didn't see any of this.
I didn't think anything was going on at the. Everything seemed fine to me.
Yeah, I don't know. Just on to Cleveland. We're on to Cincinnati. I just want to talk about this.
God, he was the best during the draft. You just go to see Bill Belichick as opposed to Cliff Kingsbury in his giant palatial mansion just sitting there like a... Yeah. We're going to go over to Bill Belichick now. It's just an empty stool in a house somewhere in Massachusetts.
Some like weird dining room with a dog. And you're like, yeah, all right, that's great. That could be my house. I don't let my dog on the chair, but...
That whole draft, you saw some of the most fascinating things. Gettleman and his trapper keeper... Yeah. And Mike Vrabel doing it from a fraternity house somewhere down in Nashville. It was phenomenal. Oh,
yes, so it was amazing.
Speaking of Matty Patty, how much him and his son look exactly the same. Like, you can see, like, his son, like, if you could shave that beard off Matty Patty, because nobody has in 10 years, he would look just like his son underneath.
Yeah, and he looks like his dad, Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Except not liked.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, very much not liked.
No, more like Satan Claus off Futurama, but
oh yeah. That's so great.
No, Santabot, that's what it is, right?
Yeah, Santabot. Yeah, he's a robot and his settings are set to way too high. Anytime we can get a Futurama reference on here, it's great. And shout out, of course, to Tex Western over at Acme Packing, who is one of the biggest Futurama fans I know, and fits it into our Slack chat all the time.
Yeah, we haven't got a chance to talk about Blurnsball yet this year because of COVID-19.
Yeah, because there's nothing. Blurnsball is coming because they can just stay away from each other. The ball will never go into the stands. Yeah, but anyhow, we'll move on to a little bit of college football. The one big piece of news for the Badgers this week, and I was reminded of it again. We saw it today, and Jim reminded me of this too. But Jack Pugh, P-U-G-H, 4-star tight end. He's 6'5", 235, coming out of high school, has committed to the Badgers. Badgers, what is it right now? They're like, I forget where it was, something like 17th in the nation or somewhere around there. They already have four or four stars committed to this team. It's shaping up to be a nice class. They're looking like they're going to do, you know, they've been putting together some really good classes the last couple of years. The Badgers are normally a team that recruits around like 30, between 30 and 40. They just had like the 24th or 26th ranked class last year, or, you know, the 2020 class, depending on who you're talking to, which site you're on. But, I mean, this class right now is shaping up pretty well. I mean, there's a long way to go, obviously. There's a lot of different people in there. But it'll be exciting to see which you know, Minnesota people come over and just decide that they want to play for a winning team. because this kid also, one of the schools he was talking to was Minnesota. And, of course, chose the Badgers over the Gophers. Because if those are two of your options, one of them isn't an option anymore. Because you're not picking the Gophers over Wisconsin at this point.
Skyuma!
Yep. Which Skyuma, do you know the history of that?
It has to do with boat racing down on Lake Pepin, I think, with the Native Americans, right?
Yeah, it's a Lakota war cry, I guess. They're Dakota, one of the Dakota nations. Sky is a war cry, and the Yuma is just University of Minnesota. So they added it all together. Skyuma is a combination of Dakota language and the University of Minnesota. And, of course, as we know, the Gopher is from a cartoon showing about how people were using the University of Minnesota to siphon money out of the state of Minnesota through some serious grifting. And it's hilarious. That's where they got it. They were stealing money. Their Gophers were carrying bags of money through holes out of the university. And that's where they got their name.
Grow the boat.
I see that they have one of their 4-star recruits, the Badgers, is a kid from Lakeville here in Minnesota, too. So you're getting, and he's a lineman, of course, you're going to get those linemen that come from Minnesota to Wisconsin just because of what Wisconsin's done.
If you're a good lineman, so just like tight ends at Iowa, running backs from...
For Wisconsin.
Help me. From Alabama. Well, yeah, from Wisconsin, too. But I mean, yeah,
Alabama,
But the thing is, like, well, a lot of positions anything, from Alabama.
You can play
in SEC schools. But the one thing, so like, the Wisconsin running backs do okay. If you're a Wisconsin lineman and you are an All-American, you're probably going to be an All-Pro in the NFL. Like, that's just how it works. Like, I mean, Wisconsin is lineman U. It really is.
Like the Cowboys just lost Travis Frederick because he's got, you know, the I think it's like an autoimmune issue thing he's working through, and they just lost him, and they replaced him with Tyler Biadasz. You know, they're like, we lost a Wisconsin center. What are we going to do? Well, let's draft a Wisconsin center.
Right.
So yeah.
Now, you know, I'm looking too back to, and I find it. I think Chris is doing a phenomenal job, but you're looking at how many talented kids are right in Wisconsin, and not just linemen. I mean, the safety that they got from, what's it, Muskego?
Yeah, Muskego. That's Muskego. A good team down there. They won the Hunter state title
Waller
last year.
Or something, that he was a four-star being recruited by Ohio State. So, I mean, he's not only getting kids from Illinois and New Jersey, he's got a pipeline, but he's keeping the kids in from Wisconsin, which is great.
And he's getting a bunch of Ohio kids, too. He's not beating Ohio State in Ohio, but he's getting Ohio kids who aren't going to Ohio State, and he's keeping them from going to Michigan.
And so, Penn State.
Yeah. I mean, this Pugh, I'm trying to think, I think he's an Ohio kid, and Michigan was one of his other teams. And he's decided Wisconsin over, like, the teams on there I know were, like, Michigan, BC, Minnesota, they were all, Penn State. He had just visited Penn State 2 days ago. Closed his recruiting and announced Wisconsin. So yeah,
And it's something that Wisconsin's needed.
He got to Penn State.
Go ahead, Jim.
I was just gonna say he got to Penn State and he said, "What happened here? Oh dear, I was a child when that happened. I didn't know that.
They're all gone. All those people. Yeah,
they all think that he. Well, I won't get into that, but most of those people that still live there think that." Joe Pa got a raw deal, which is just head shaking to me, but whatever.
Yeah. The other thing we want to talk about in terms of football news is some.
Before you take off, I was just going to ask about the Wisconsin lineman bit. So I know we had a talk a while back about who the best offensive tackle of all time was, John. I think Munoz won out. Was that how we came out on that conversation?
Yeah, that's a fair name. I loved Anthony Munoz. That dude, he was amazing.
What do you think, Jim?
I would have said Joe Thomas.
Okay, because that's what I was just going to say, Joe Thomas, too, like, because we were talking
against Anthony Munoz, but Joe Thomas did.
It's a conversation worth having, like, you know, you got Forrest Gregg, Joe Thomas, Anthony Munoz, and you're like, those guys are in that conversation. Willie Rolfe with the Saints and the Chiefs.
Jonathan Ogden,
yeah. I mean, these are big names.
What we were saying too, what's his name from the Rams? Not only Jackie Slater, but the one Orlando Pace.
Yeah, Orlando Pace. Gosh. Tony Baselli.
Tony Baselli was another. Where did he come from? Is he Wisconsin?
I thought USC.
No, USC. He's a USC guy. Yeah.
USC, that's right. Okay. Either way, I was just going to say, so maybe one of the best all-time offensive linemen came from Wisconsin as well, too. So that's in Joe Thomas. I always forget Joe Thomas. I don't forget Joe Thomas went to Wisconsin. It's just that, God, he was such a lost talent in Cleveland. I wish he could have played anywhere else. Where's that?
Mike Webster as well.
Yeah.
Another great lineman in the days. So... Aaron's gotten that. The one thing I'll say is moving on to the next point is there's some talk now back and forth in the conferences. The SEC just voted, I think 2 days ago, about opening up their facilities. The NCAA has said that teams are allowed to let athletes or universities are allowed to let their athletes from any teams or wherever, fall sport teams, in starting June 1st. So it's the end of the week here for what we're doing. So a lot of the conferences are debating whether or not they're going to do that and what they're going to do about this. The Big Ten has basically said they're not going to play games if there aren't students on campus. So if you're not having students on campus, they're not going to bring athletes in and play games in your stadiums. I mean, that's a lot of kids. There's just it's a ton of kids. It's way bigger than a professional football team because you got walk-ons. You have, 72, 75 scholarship athletes and all that. It's just way too much. The SEC has voted to start letting athletes into campus from all sports starting June 8th. They were going to decide between June 1st and June 15th and split the difference. They are already planning on how they're just going to go ahead with things as planned. They're fully intending on just playing the season because they're the SEC and football is the only thing they do. If students are not, players, you know, fans are not, they're planning to play football at this point. At this point, they're talking about doing some testing, but from what I've read, the University of Florida, University of Tennessee are saying things like symptomatic people only. By that point, it's probably too late once they're symptomatic. But that's kind of where they are in some of their testing plans. I mean, if you're talking about bringing kids back onto campus, there's got to be some kind of plan for testing. I'm not the one to create your plan for testing. I'm not qualified. None of us are particularly qualified to do that. But I do know enough to know that they have to have some kind of plan. Some schools are talking, even in the SEC, you're talking about at least doing initial screening for everybody and then doing, you know, things like just tested screening, not actual testing, but screening for possible people to get tested after they get on campus after that. Like I said, the Big Ten is talking about nobody doing anything until we get the okay to get people back on campus. Because if we don't have people on campus, how are you going to have a game? I mean, you know, like in Camp Randall, that's right there on campus. That's one of the reasons why it gets where it is, and everybody's right there already. Which is, of course, why the student section shows up so late to every Badgers game. They live right there, and they're going to drink right up until they don't have to. And if there's nobody on campus, it's going to be hard to get players to be there because the players live on campus or at least near campus. So it's going to be interesting to see how some of these universities are going to start handling this, and the conferences are going to have to set it up. Some conferences might play while others don't. Is a possibility we have to consider at this point. Like, the SEC might play and the Pac-12 might not.
What does the NCAA do? I mean, aren't they supposed to be in charge of this? Am I the only one missing this? I mean, for God's sakes, I know that they're good about collecting checks off of, you know, what students do. But how about you put something together, some type of plan that everybody has to obey by? You can't have certain conferences playing football and others not. I don't see that. It baffles me.
You hit it on the head, Jim. Hit it on the head, Jim. They don't. They're good at cashing checks. That's it. And so, the conference that makes them the most money is the SEC. So they're not going to tell the SEC what to do, just like they won't tell the ACC what to do for basketball. You know. It's just that's how it is, or the Big Ten for basketball, for that matter, nowadays. But they're not going to stop the SEC from doing what they do, and the NCAA is really good at just not doing anything.
The Big Ten is actually the biggest money maker at this point. The Big Ten network is the largest network. It makes the most money. It makes more than the SEC, partly because SEC basketball is garbage, and there is no SEC hockey. And
right.
I mean, well, that's volleyball. That's why volleyball in the Big Ten, wrestling in the Big Ten.
Big Ten's all around better conference, but I'm just saying, as far as one sport goes, yes, okay, exactly.
One sport, yeah.
So of course they're not going to tell the SEC what to do for football because whatever. But I mean, the bigger implications is this. So what happens? So is the SEC just going to play each other? Or are they just going to play the other conferences that are up? What happens to the contracts that they've signed with teams that they were supposed to play this year? Another big thing. How does this work for the draft? Do all the kids that play for teams that aren't playing this year but have to go to school,
they don't
virtually, do they lose a year of eligibility? Can they get out of their scholarships because they didn't play this year to go play for an SEC team? How about there's a kid from the Big Ten, plays for Wisconsin, goes, hey, what the hell, I want to play this year. Georgia just said, hey, we got a spot for you, we're playing, can I get out of my scholarship? And can I play this year? Because my team's not playing.
My guess is the answer is likely no.
My life is based on playing football. I plan on being in the NFL. I'm going to get 1 year older without playing anything this year. I'm going to lose money by not being drafted or being drafted later because I didn't play for Wisconsin this year. I could go play for Georgia. I'm a junior. I would have been drafted this year. I mean, now you're talking about legal input. I mean, because now money's involved in it. And so, how does that work?
Well, then it goes back to, I think, the fact of the idea or the concept overall with universities, not just sports, that these universities are losing, they're going to lose millions and millions of dollars by not having these kids on campus. And they're probably at the end of the day, and I'm not going to go into the spectrum of what's going to happen, but the idea of them opening up campus just to get these kids back on there, get them back on campus to make money, you might see that.
Well,
and then all hell breaks loose. So,
well, just take a look. I mean, if you've got, say, you're Texas State, you're the Bobcats, and you've got a game this year, and you're going to go play, you know, Texas, or you're going to just go get beat up by Alabama, something like that. They're going to pay you a ton of money. And well, the money that they make from those games can probably pay all the professors at the university for the entire year, or build a completely new, you know, science building for their academics and such. The amount of money that doesn't go into universities based on that then is massive and can account for a lot. And like we talked about last week, Aaron, you know, like some of these smaller schools, they're going to be cutting entire athletic departments. Even larger schools are cutting, you know, we're going to cut swimming this year. We just can't do it. We're going to cut swimming because we lost enough football revenue. We can't do swimming anymore. We're going to have to cut, you know, crew team. We're going to have to cut volleyball. That stuff's happening already.
And Jim, you weren't there for that one. I'm sure you listened to it though, because you listened to everyone. But I was walking the tightrope on the Title IX bit on that one. Like, so the universities are going to lose a whole bunch of money because football's not going to get played. But in order to stay within the regulations of Title IX, does that mean that they're going to cut all the men's teams first?
Yeah, that's
cut some of it.
And that's when we got into the whole thing that they need to exempt football and men's basketball from Title IX talks. Like, it's not, it throws everything out of whack.
They're going to allow it to you. I truthfully believe this, right or wrong. I mean, no matter what you feel, that if it's all about getting students back on campus so you can play games and generate money, remarkably, they're going to find kids on campus this fall. I just, you know, no matter what. I think that's what you're going to find, because they're going to think to themselves, well, we can't lose all this millions of dollars, which, you know,
the kids want to play because they're playing to make money in a couple of years or next year. So they don't want to miss a year of playing too. It's entirely possible. Playing in front of empty stadiums is probably the most likely course.
Yeah. Just in the larger scheme of things, sports aside, I'm saying this as a completely trying to be as unbiased and non-political as possible. At what point do we sacrifice the closing of universities and institutions? I mean, what do we do? I mean, universities are going to start closing down if they don't put people in dorms, because that's how they make money. They're landlords, and the dorms are their tenants. They have empty buildings that aren't being used. In the summertime, they use them for other events. I mean, if you've ever been up, I'll use Grandma's Marathon again up in Duluth. UW-Superior packs their dorms for one weekend every single summer with all the runners from Grandma's Marathon, because there's not enough hotel rooms up there for the 15,000 runners. You know, so, I mean, it's going to come to push or shove. And, I mean, and you can say right or wrong one way or another. You can play the high and mighty card, and it doesn't matter. If things are just going to not come back because of this, then people are going to start crossing lines, and that's what's going to happen. And Jim, I think you're right. Kids are going to be back on campus next fall, and that's just how it is, because otherwise the next semester there won't be a campus for them to go back to.
Yeah, I mean,
just be kids not having school.
Schools, they'll be fine. It's going to be, you know, the Sun Belt. It's going to be, well, and some of them are kind of state schools, so they might be all right.
It's going to be UW-Superior, my alma mater. I mean,
they don't pay anything. Well,
also, not getting into politics, UW system has a lot of money. Anyways, But you know, just other places in small schools all over the place they're going to suffer from it. I mean, it's going to come to push shove. And you're right, the big schools can't. But I mean, at what level of damage to just like? Yeah. It's Jim's right. It's going to happen.
Things are
college is going to happen in the fall.
Even if it doesn't, football will happen. I think is probably the more accurate way of addressing this, is that it's more likely that we'll see football than anything. Even if if somehow the Big Ten backs off because they're like, you know, say the Pac-12 decides they're going to play, even if just the SEC says they're going to play, how does the Big Ten say, well, we're just not going to? It's going to be hard to do. That's going to be a hard line to try to walk once they get to that point, because they it's going to be hard to give up that kind of funding and that kind of money for a lot of people in those areas.
And maybe Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner, knows that there's going to be students on campus, and he's saying that just to, you know, put in light that he cares. I don't know. You know, it all depends. I mean, but I can't. If that's what it takes to play Big Ten football, I think you're going to see students on campus. And, you know, you can debate this all you want on the one side or the other side. It's just, eventually you've got to get on with it, I guess.
We could say one thing they could do is they can say students are coming into campus, but it's not going to be a full. We're not going to have the number of students we normally have. We're going to have some doing more distance learning, but we're going to have a certain, other amount, limited amount allowed into campus for whatever sorts of things, but not lecture halls, obviously. I mean, we're going to do that some other way. Kind of like how elementary schools are talking about, splitting up so they can have half classes and things like that, alternating weeks from who's at home and who's in person type of stuff. We'll see how they do that. It's hard to do that conversation without trying, we don't want to be political on here. We're just trying to talk about, what does it look like, and what are we talking about here, and what is the discussion? But yeah, we're not the doctors, we're not going to be political about it.
You got to discuss it both ways. Yeah. I mean, you just have to. I mean, it's just that's where what we're living in right now, that you have to discuss.
And we'll save our politics for post-show. No, I'm just kidding. The other one thing that is fun is actually the NBA and the NHL have talked about what possible scenarios they're going to have for having a playoff of some sort. The NHL has a more complete plan at this point, which apparently has been approved by the NHLPA. Their plan is a 24-team playoff. The top four teams in each conference will get a bye into the second round. So 24 total teams. I mean, there's 30 teams in the NHL, right, I think. Or is it 31 now with the Winnipeg? Or whatever it is. So, yeah, either way, they're going to have 24 of the teams in the playoff. So it's going to be a bunch of teams, four on each side getting a bye in, leaving 16 teams playing, eight on each side playing to get in to play the top four on each side. And they're going to try to find a way to just get them all together and get this sort of thing run through, and they want to start playing hockey again. And they've got a plan. I don't know when they're planning to start this, but they're going to have to get ice up and ready, and they're going to have to get players back in the ice. As much as Aaron was talking about trying to get, the NBA guys, they've got a hoop in their backyard. They've been working, or they got an indoor facility or whatever. Not a lot of NHL guys have just a rink, especially in August or May at this point. I guess it's like June. You don't have ice. So, I mean, that's really hard to do. You need a specialized facility for something like that. So, yeah, they're going to have to get in and working things out before they can get to this playoff. I think it gives a definite advantage to the teams playing. Well, I guess I don't know. I'm not sure if it's going to give an advantage to the second round teams or the first round teams. The second round teams will have another week of practice, but the first round teams will have been playing games. So it's going to be a very interesting setup, and it'll be odd to see. The NBA has talked about something. I have not seen a written plan, but they're planning to play everything at Disney. They're going to they're going to take over all the hotels. They're going to get everything set up, and they're going to play everything at Disney and have all the players basically locked down there. I'll give one interesting caveat to what Aaron was telling us earlier about all the NBA players make $2 million or whatever and have a basketball hoop at home. Giannis Antetokounmpo has specifically said that he's out of practice now because he does not have a hoop at home.
Oh.
That hurts.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, that really hurts our team. So,
It doesn't matter. He can't shoot anyways. But anyways, back to the NHL. Back to the NHL. So yeah. Jim, being from Minnesota, he can appreciate this one too. He probably remembers back to the day of the North Stars when every team in the NHL made the playoffs, it seemed like, because the last time the North Stars made the finals, I think they had a losing record going. I think they were second to last in the conference going in or something like that and went on a mad tear through the playoffs.
I think that's when they got beat by the Penguins. I was a freshman in high school. I think it was 91. Yeah. 90 or 91. Yeah. It's funny when John was talking about the setup of how they're going to do it. And you lived in Minnesota. Well, you both lived in Minnesota.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the state hockey tournament.
Right.
The state high school. I mean, that's which everybody loved. I mean, that will be interesting to me. I've seen that. You know, they've talked about just certain areas or certain arenas like Minnesota or in St. Paul and Vancouver. And then I saw one that they were going to play all the games in Grand Forks. I read that the other day, which I thought was like
interesting.
I don't know where they're going to house them, but whatever.
Vegas was another one.
Vegas is still being considered the favorite at this point.
Because they could put every single player in like one hotel.
Yeah. Well, and think about this, too. Minnesota Wild, Jim, is actually going to be one of the teams that will benefit from this plan because they were going to be the 10th seed in the Western Conference, and now the 10th seed's in.
Oh, shocking. And they're going to host it in Minnesota, huh? Yeah, I get it.
No. The 10th seed will play at the 7th seed, Vancouver Canucks, which I always love that because it's just a slur for Canadians is their team name. Like Maple Leafs, Canucks, and Canadiens. You're like, your entire nation is just naming your hockey teams for different names for Canadians.
I find this interesting, the fact that, and I was thinking about this the other day, because somebody tweeted out about in football, if this were to happen, are they going to have to expand their rosters for both NHL and NBA in case somebody comes down with the virus and then immediately shelter them and then bring up somebody else? And like have people that aren't on the roster living in like a Hotel 6 down the road from Disney World just in case.
That's not a bad point. Yeah, like someone, who's your farm team, especially for hockey, you know, IHL, you know, NBA, they pretty much take care of themselves internally. But yeah, no, the NHL, that's a great point. Like, and baseball going forward too, like there's not going to be any minor league baseball.
They're
just talking about letting the major league teams play. Major League Baseball really uses we're not even talking about them, but yeah, you're right with the IHL bringing them up. You don't just bring them up from Des Moines if you're the Wild now.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting, like, you know, if you got a Rudy Gobert touching everybody's stuff and getting people sick, that are they going to bring somebody else up and then quickly get rid of those other two and put them somewhere? I know it sounds terrible to say, but you know, and have to bring up other players from practice squad type situation. Yeah.
Something else that they were talking about on the Power Trip Morning Show the other day was that the international players, you're talking about two leagues, the NBA and the NHL, that have a ton of international players.
Yeah.
And are they going to be made to quarantine for 2 weeks before they start? In which case, then they can't practice.
That's if they went home. Yeah, who knows? Yeah,
if they went home to Russia or to Eastern Sweden. Europe, in both the NBA, I mean, yeah, except for Russia, you know, it's basically the same for both the NHL and the NBA. Eastern Europe, Scandinavia, definitely Eastern. The NBA has got a lot of people from a lot of places now too. Yeah. Like, I'm sure there's some Australians. There's probably some Chinese. There's all over the place.
I think with the way that their seasons,
it's not like NASCAR where they're all from North Carolina,
Tennessee.
Aaron, why don't you wrap us up with talking through the NASCAR here, since you wanted to make sure we got that in.
Oh, I just wanted. I'll bring it up here. So I do love that we do actually have live sports right now. NASCAR is a sport. These men have abilities that other people don't have. And so it's been hard to watch. And then I just closed it. Son of a but it was a lot of fun watching it yesterday. The Coca-Cola 600 was run in Charlotte. A lot of the stuff that's going on with the NASCAR right now, though, with them racing on Wednesday nights and Saturdays, is very interesting to watch between the elongated pit stop after lap 20 because they don't have time to practice, so that's when they have to make their adjustments on the fly, and racers talking about their cars getting loose. Jimmy Johnson, 2 weeks, the first race he was leading, and then his car just drifted into the wall because it got loose because they're not able to fine tune the things like they can during a normal NASCAR season, where they race, then they have a week, then they race, then they have a week, they have a race. No, they're racing on Sunday, and then they're racing on Wednesday, and then they're racing on Sunday, and then racing on Wednesday, and it's fun. It's a lot of fun, I think. And we talked on this podcast, God, it would have had to been, let's see here, so late March. I thought NASCAR would never shut down. I thought that they were just going to find a way to keep it going, because I said, if there is one sport that you can do this with, it is NASCAR, because all the racers are in their own cars. The pit crews are already all wearing masks and all the protective gear. It'd be just, I figured they'd maybe take a week or two off. I didn't think they'd take 2 months off like everybody else did, but they did, and for good reason. I understand that, but yeah. NASCAR. I think NASCAR is going to make some fans during this time, and they're going to come out as the winners in the long term. And they've proven it. It was really, really weird watching Kevin Harvick win last week on Sunday, get out of his car. They've all burned out their donuts, you know, at the end, you know, they go down to the race, the finish line. They do their donuts over top the icons and stuff like that. And then Kevin Harvick slowly got out of his car and just stood there and went, okay, now what? Because usually they're being showered with champagne, and the Monster Energy girls are there, and people are screaming, and there's so much noise. Instead, Kevin Harvick just gets out, wins his 50th NASCAR race last weekend, and gets out and just goes, yo, what's up? Hi. This is my car.
We were saying beforehand, the social distancing works out pretty well in NASCAR up until the moment when Kyle Busch punches someone in the face, and then all bets are off.
True story.
Well, you brought up, Aaron, I a question for you. You said that the infields were empty because that's where the RVs usually park.
Yeah.
I guess my question is, why wouldn't they allow RVs there? Is it if you stay within your area of an RV, or if you're on top of the RV, it's just you and whoever. No, I mean, I'm thinking back to my youth of Trapper John.
Nobody's going to stay in.
He used to hang out on top of the RV.
Jim, it's not the RVs, it's the people in the RVs.
Yeah, they're not going to stay right in their little spots. There's no chance.
No way.
Yeah.
They have a hard enough time keeping them from crawling onto the track sometimes.
If you've
ever been to a NASCAR race, it's a circus. It's fun. It's fun.
I've been to a couple dirt track races. I can only imagine.
I've been out to Golden Sands, actually.
Jim, in a real world, like, that's a great point. Like, me and my family, you know, talking about going out camping and stuff like that, you know, it's just the same thing. It's like, if you have your own campsite, it's no big deal. It's just, I think it has more to do with the public facilities than anything else. So,
that could be it.
And,
all right.
Well, Cousin Eddie has his own bathroom. He can just go in there.
I can't even say the line that makes
it. I almost blurted it out just a second ago. So.
Yeah. We're going to keep that one out. All right, everybody. Thank you again. First off, big thanks to Jim Widener for joining us again. It's always wonderful to have Jim on the podcast.
Thanks, guys.
Remember to you can follow Jim at JimWidener51. There is no underscore.
Can follow Jim_Widener51. I would imagine, again, he's a great follow.
Let's all go follow
him, too. He probably likes Bent Paddle. So,
Bent Paddle is not a paid sponsor, but Aaron does enjoy Bent Paddle, and I don't know who doesn't at this point. You can follow the podcast at ScannyJohnnyPod. You can follow me at NotSoHumbleHost, and you can follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk. And remember, wherever you listen to us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or anywhere else, remember to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review. And, of course, the least important is to listen. Go download and rate and review. I mean, you know, subscribing is nice, but make sure you download every week. And remember, everybody, whether you are on the town or on the goat, or whether you're not on the town and not on the go, it is always on Wisconsin.
Sky you ma!
No.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening, and on Wisconsin.